Welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven-figure plus entrepreneurs build incredible businesses and amazing lives. I'm Andrew Guderian, and a little bit, you know, kind of excited for this episode. Not excited, but kind of a cool moment. This is officially episode 300, which really means nothing because there's many times where I have an episode 279 and 280, and my podcast editor doesn't want me to mess up the scheduling because I've already got it. So I make a podcast episode 279.4 and then I slide a 279.6 in. So there's probably like episode 325 when it comes down to it. But even so, the official number of episode 300, pretty crazy. It started the podcast back in, oh man, it was the summer of 2013, you know, 6.5 years ago, which dates me as someone, like I mentioned recently, who does not know and has never used TikTok. Pretty much a dinosaur, but kind of cool to be doing it for that long, to still be having fun with it, to still have people listening, to not have scared off everybody. So if you're listening now, thank you, especially if you've listened, if you've been masochistic enough to listen the entire time, man, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And thanks for sticking with it. And hopefully maybe I'll be crazy enough to do this for another 6.5 years. We'll see. So today on the show, I'm joined by Alex Banis, who is responsible for the worldwide e-commerce operations for Specialized Bikes. If you're in the bike world, you know that name. They're one of the biggest, most respected names in bikes. If you don't, just take my word for it. They're a pretty big deal. And so Alex is, you know, he's got this amazing perspective on one, enterprise e-commerce, but also we talk about a lot of things. Among those, what he's seeing in e-commerce markets worldwide, in North America, of course, but also Europe, you know, Asia and China. We talk about Australia. We talk about even, you know, Latin America and Africa briefly. He has a really interesting perspective on that. And we're also talking to some of the logistics about how do you sell a brand worldwide like that? He has dozens, I think, of different country-specific websites that he has to manage. And we talk about how they as a brand approach selling direct to consumer, but also be able to loop in their retailers so they're not alienating their retailers that they sell through. Pretty interesting. And so he's got a pretty phenomenal perspective, and it's a lot of fun to talk about, even if you're not a mountain biker. And if you are a mountain biker, you're going to have an especially good time. So hope you enjoyed the discussion. I want to give a big thank you before we jump in, though, to our two sponsors who make the show possible. First, to the incredible team at Liquid Web, who, if you're on WooCommerce, pretty safe to say they geek out on WooCommerce way harder than you do to make your life easier. So they spend a lot of time thinking about things like how can they architect their environment so that the database calls are as fast as possible? How can they create a little sandbox so that if you want to run some simulation and tests before you go on Shark Tank, you can do that to make sure your store is going to stay online? How can they manage upgrades and plugin upgrades, WordPress upgrades, and WooCommerce upgrades for you so that you don't crash and break your entire site when you upgrade to the next version of any of those? And so that's their job, is to make your WooCommerce experience as painless and wonderful as possible. So if that sounds good to you, check them out, ecommercefuel.com/liquidweb. And then secondly, a big thank you to the team over at Klaviyo, who, man, is helping 20,000 store owners just absolutely slay it with email marketing. Email marketing did the State of the Merchant this year. It was listed as one of, if not the most effective in terms of ROI basis for your marketing efforts. And man, even without Klaviyo, you put Klaviyo in there and it just supercharges it, because they have access to so much data, let you trigger emails based on so many customizable events that you really can create just incredible targeted flows that help you produce revenue with email marketing at a higher rate than just about anything else. So if that sounds good to you, learn more about them, get started for free at klaviyo.com/ECF. That's klaviyo.com/ECF. Yeah, let's jump into this discussion with Alex about international e-commerce and how he manages to keep international brand on the rails. Alex, welcome to the podcast, sir. Good to have you on.
Thanks, Andrew. Good to be here.
Yeah, I remember seeing your application come across and looking at it and thinking, what? The dude that's responsible for e-commerce for Specialized, the mountain bike company, is coming in. This is pretty cool. Yeah, good to finally have you the mic here and dive into some stuff. And I feel like we would be doing both of us a disservice if we didn't geek out about mountain bikes a little bit. And it's funny, I bought a mountain bike quasi recently, the last 3 years or so. And before, I've been mountain biking since I was in high school, early high school, maybe even junior high. And my old bike was about 10 years old. And man, the evolution in mountain biking over the last 10 years has been just insane. I didn't think they had changed that much until I rode my new bike and then tried to go back to my old bike. And it felt like it was just a Fisher Price toy. I'd come around corners and just about totally wreck on it. It's like driving a modern light motorcycle without an engine as opposed to, you know, a little trike from a decade ago. So it's been cool to watch, man, that the industry has changed so much in just a decade.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm a mountain bike rider at heart, you know, for me. And I grew up, you know, riding on Mount Tam on these clunkers that were, you know, solid stainless steel. I think I had a Specialized even back then, and it was like 34 pounds. So you could go down the hill really fast, but climbing was a bit rough. And I'm happy to say I've definitely upgraded, you know, while it's Specialized. I'm on a stump jumper now. And, you know, the thing you realize is that the technology, I mean, just kind of like software, but like hardware too, you know, it's just gotten so much better. The bikes are just lighter than ever. They're stiffer than ever. They can have any sort of, you know, set up for your riding style that you want. You can change your geos with a flip of a switch. All the cables are inside the frame now, so it's a quiet ride. It's really, really amazing to just see how much, you know, the space has advanced.
Yeah, it's cool to see. So we'll spare people that aren't bikers, you know, too much of a you and me a geek out session on biking. It's maybe we'll do that a little off mic or after the fact and put it after the thing wraps up. But I want to talk on the e-commerce side, because you have, I mean, running e-commerce for a global brand, Specialized, if you aren't in, you know, if you don't know the bike space, Specialized is, you know, one of the primary leaders, most well-known names in biking in general, mountain biking as well. And so, you know, global presence is a really well-known product. And we're going to talk about all sorts of facets of what you do, but I'd love to talk about like the branding and the life cycle for a bike purchase. You think about, especially on the higher end, right? Like, you know, like I talked about, you know, people drop, you know, four or five, sometimes even $10,000 on a really, you know, a great mountain bike, high ticket price point. You make great stuff, but there's also a level of branding involved there, because there's, you know, there's a lot of good bikes out there, Specialized among them. And so how do you think about the life cycle purchase for a bike too? Because a lot of times people aren't gonna buy them, you know, they'll buy them once every 4 or 5 years. So, but how do you think about how you nurture that relationship with customers and build up the brand and you know, because it's not just as simple as, you know, running some AdWords and a little retargeting and bam, you sell an $8,000 bike. So how do you think about the whole process from a customer perspective?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're definitely not an impulse buy, that's for sure. Yeah, it's a long sales cycle for the bikes in particular. I think it's just real quick, it's important, you know, to know that like Specialized just isn't bikes. We also have a huge equipment business, which includes helmets, saddles, shoes, jerseys, you know, our catalog is quite big. You know, we're the original equipment manufacturer for all these things. To give you a sense of the scale, you know, the US site has 8,000 SKUs. We organize all our bikes into 17 different riding styles, and we have 33 different equipment categories. So it's a massive catalog, right? And it's as much about sort of positioning the branding and building the stoke for new hot product as it is just keeping it organized and helping people find what they're looking for. So this really starts sort of from a point of view of you know, how we're trying to just add value to the rider's life, whether they're road, whether they're mountain, whether they ride electric, which is a huge growth category right now. And we really prioritize, especially when we were launching new product into market, on building the stoke, is I guess California speak for, you know, getting all the marketing dialed across all the channels, making the message consistent, but also making it, you know, sort of globally authentic, you know, for the brand, but then within each market, like locally relevant, you know, and that comes down to the imagery, the placement, and the local message. And from there, we can basically help guide them to, you know, the make and the model that's right for them.
Yeah. One thing I noticed, you guys are doing a really good job of, on the content side on your blog, like a video series highlighting and appreciating the trail builders, because, you know, trail builders do a ton of work. They don't get a whole lot of credit, but they're so essential for the industry. And you guys have a really cool series doing stuff like that. And I think it's, you obviously have to have a really good product. And I think as marketers, we like to think we're immune to all this marketing and how you feel when you get on a product. But I, you know, it's my last bike purchase wasn't entirely driven by that, but it was definitely part of it was the brand and the story and some of the marketing and like becoming part of the family that you buy into when you get the product. And I don't think we're as immune to that as we like to think, even as, you know, super quote unquote savvy digital marketers.
Yeah. And that's a super important piece for us. You know, I think this is a bit of a change. You know, we've traditionally been a manufacturer. We haven't really, you know, up until I would say, you know, the last decade or so focused on brand and lifestyle and mission and that sort of thing. So what you see a lot on the website is a lot of storytelling. There's a ton of storytelling. I mean, even if you go into bikes and you click on shop by model and you click into, you know, my personal favorite, the Stump Jumper, you don't just land on a category page, you land on a story page that talks to you about, you know, a bike that basically took an extra, you know, 3 years to relaunch because they changed so much and basically, you know, redefine the sport again. And so we're always trying to balance between that storytelling and then obviously getting out of the way and letting people, you know, get to product and find what they want.
Do you work, is there a whole team, I'm guessing, at Specialized that focuses on, you know, the content and the storytelling? You've got your hands full enough with just dealing with a huge e-commerce, you know, infrastructure and all that. But do you guys work pretty closely together to match those up? Or is it a little more siloed where like they do the storytelling on the blog and certain aspects and you kind of take care of the other? Or are you guys working together regularly to make sure everything jives?
Yeah, we work regularly together. We've got an awesome creative and brand team, and they just absolutely crush it. And we're all, you know, kind of in the same building. So there's a lot of talk and exchange that goes through. But what you'll notice is a few things. One is the Instagram game. You know, this is probably the strongest brand I've ever worked for that just really understands who their audience is on Instagram. And you won't see a lot of commerce there. So this may shock your readers when I say this, listeners, but we don't drive direct response Instagram shopping ads. We leave that alone and we leave that for storytelling. Now we'll do Facebook ads, we'll do Google ads, we'll do retargeting, but we're not going to force a store into Instagram. And as a result, you know, I think our following's doubled over the last 3 years and our Instagram channel's bigger than the next 5 bike brands combined. I think just cross that threshold. So it's clearly working.
I'd love to get your thoughts on, I mean, you run a global e-commerce or e-commerce ops for a global brand. And so, you know, you have this really cool perspective that I think a lot of us don't have, especially in kind of the Western world where we're very either US centric. A lot of people listening are at least. So I'd love to get your thoughts and maybe we could do kind of a 90 second take on each one of these regions in terms of what's going on there, how competitive e-commerce is there, what you think, you know, if you think there's a lot of opportunity or not so much, and how it's kind of different relative to the US market and the global market. So maybe we can start with Europe. Like I know you guys sell in Europe. 90 second hot take on e-commerce in Europe right now in terms of, you think it's a big opportunity? Is it insanely complex with, you know, all the different nations? Is it worth being there? Yeah. What are your thoughts in 90 seconds, if that's possible, on the e-commerce landscape in Europe?
Yeah, sure. So Europe's huge for us, especially because all of the major road races during the summer are over there, Tour de France, Giro d'Italia, Vuelta, and we just see the traffic is skyrocketing. They're also like pretty, you know, mature when it comes to shopping online. Everyone's comfortable with it. We were fortunate enough to partner with a European-based payment gateway, so they've made entering the region quite easy. I think the biggest sort of challenges for us, especially with a very localized distributor network. The recent change in law with cross-border in the EU is important because you can no longer sort of prohibit people from shopping cross-border, and it forces, you know, particularly dealers and brick and mortar to sort of align internationally, if you will, because you have to allow users to shop anywhere. And then I think as far as sort of like the online presence of these sort of third party, you know, big box pure plays, you know, that's sort of driving up competition as well. A lot of these sites have just huge marketing budgets. You know, Amazon is continues to spread, you know, throughout, and we see the online sort of CPC and digital ad landscape just getting more and more expensive.
Yeah. Do you feel like Europe is a, do you feel like there's much opportunity in Europe for someone, let's say they're in Canada or the United States or Australia, Western, but you know, Western, traditional Western nation, but not Europe. Is the opportunity, and I'm totally asking you to generalize here, but let's say for a $3 or $4 million brand, is it worth trying to be able to jump through some of the hoops that you're going to have to given the opportunity there? Like, do you think the hassle to opportunity factor is worth it for merchants in that range?
Yes, absolutely. But you need to do it one country at a time. Each country has its own sort of local just expectations, right? Like in France, it's super important that like every piece of communication you send is perfectly translated. In Germany, if you know you're sending trigger emails, you know, with broken images or something gets messed up in your CSS, like it's a very imperfect experience, and the German consumer really doesn't like that. And you know, and then the UK, you know, can be, depending on what you're selling, incredibly price driven. You know, especially with sort of, you know, how the high street is these days. So you really need to understand the country you want to go to. You need to prioritize based on, you know, where you think you can make or generate the most revenue, and then just sort of methodically kind of start to enter the region, a country at a time, once you've sort of hit all those local requirements.
Really interesting. The different like nuances and sensitivities of the different markets. Australia, thoughts on Australia? I feel like when I've chatted with merchants there, never having sold, but just completely based on, you know, third hand or second hand discussions with people, not nearly as competitive. It sounds like Amazon, maybe I'm wrong on this, but it sounds like Amazon really is not either taking a hold there or hasn't really invested or tried to, but it's scaled it back because it didn't catch on. So much smaller market, obviously, but much less competitive. Some of the conversion rates I see for sites and brands that are, you know, probably not nearly as sophisticated as some of their counterparts in the US, but still get great conversion rates are pretty impressive. Is that a fair thoughts on that? Am I mischaracterizing that? Again, I don't have nearly as much experience as people on the ground or you, but what's your 90 seconds thoughts on Australia?
Yeah, Australia is great. I will caveat it and say we have a DC in Australia, which makes a huge difference on delivery times.
What's a DC?
Sorry, distribution center. So
okay.
We're shipping, you know, orders from our Australian e-commerce site from within the country. I think the biggest hurdle, you know, historically has been just sort of the time to delivery, because to ship there, to get it to clear, you know, Australian customs, which are notoriously tough, you know, and to finally get it in, it just takes weeks, you know. I think absolutely what you said from like a marketing standpoint, one of the big learnings we had was we basically got a read on the sort of appetite through Facebook, and we found Facebook ads to be way more cost effective down there than say in the US, just because, as you said, there's less competition. We were very particular about running it from like a local specialized Australia-based Facebook page, you know, that had like a local business address and stuff like that. And it's just been great. It was a new market for us. It launched about a year and a half ago, and they've just been growing like gangbusters.
What about Asia? And maybe Asia is so broad. Maybe we can go China first and then broader Asia. Do you guys do a lot of, I mean, is mountain biking a big thing in those countries? And then what are you seeing maybe with China, Japan, Korea, and Asia in general in terms of e-commerce? And also culturally too, like it's, you know, probably the biggest cultural differences in terms of Western world versus part. I'm just guessing there. And that's a big deal. I mean, you look at Amazon, they tried to break into Asia. I think they gave up there too. Maybe I'm wrong, but you know, I think people underestimate sometimes how, you know, how important getting the cultural aspects of things right are. So thoughts on Asia and the countries there?
Sure. Asia's growing super fast. For them, you know, I guess let's start with China, right? So we've got two lines within Specialized. We have, you know, our sort of core catalog, which is specialized. And then we have what we call S-Works, which is sort of that super premium, higher price point, you know, carbon fiber. It's really the elite designation within our catalog, right? So S-Works in China is also very much a status symbol. What we found is there's a huge appetite for it. But up until recently, we were basically transacting everything through Tmall, which was working great, but you couldn't really, it's hard to get, you know, any sort of detailed customer data. It's hard to know, you know, when you run a marketing campaign, what's actually moving the needle. Tmall, to some extent, is a little bit of a black box. So one of the things we are working diligently on is sort of a split, or I would say a multi-channel strategy, where we can elevate our S-Works brand within the market, but with a bit more control over its brand presence. Because, you know, the marketplace presence in the whole region isn't great if you're carrying a really premium product. We're interested to see what a Western branded approach to sort of the most premium part of our offering does, and we'll run them side by side and build a strategy around, you know, segmenting the catalog that way.
So Tmall is kind of the subsidiary of Alibaba. It's not like Amazon, but it's a marketplace, one of, if not the most popular marketplaces in China. Am I thinking about that right?
Absolutely. It's where e-commerce gets done, pretty much.
Are there many, you know, just independent .coms or, you know, .cn or whatever the extension is, like you have in the US, that people sell just from their site? Is that a big part of the market, or is it really like 95% plus if people are shopping online in China, almost always are going to Tmall?
A lot of it is on Tmall. We're trying this sort of self-hosted site more as a brand exercise than anything else. We don't expect it'll ever outperform Tmall, just because the volume there is unbelievable, particularly around those national holidays. So, but you do see it. You do see, you know, Adidas and Nike and all the major athletic brands will have some sort of branded standalone site in addition to typically a Tmall presence.
Is cycling, again, just putting my biking hat here, is mountain biking, cycling, is it big in China? Or is it, I mean, it sounds like it's obviously, you got, you know, 1.3 billion people or four, whatever it is, you're going to have some segment of it that's pretty interested in it. But is it a big thing in China like it is other places?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, especially when you get out of the major metros, for sure.
Interesting. Thoughts on South America, maybe just Latin America in general. Are you guys doing much there? And what do you see in terms of some of the e-commerce trends in terms of maturity? Which countries maybe are advancing and maturing the fastest, or where the most opportunity is? What do you see in South America?
South America is a tough one. We have e-commerce in Brazil currently, and we didn't really see significant growth until we were able to provide split payments and installments. Sort of anything you can do from a payment standpoint to ease the burden, to allow people to pay over time, has a huge impact in the region. With the other countries too, I think, you know, some of the political instability in Argentina, Venezuela, and Chile have certainly put a hamper on, I think, commerce in general. But it's hard down there. You know, it's a fragmented payments infrastructure. You've got, you know, the Andes running right through the continent to sort of slow down delivery times. And there are certain countries like Brazil, which have just an unbelievable amount of like import taxes that have to be calculated and duty restrictions and all this sort of stuff that just needs to be navigated if you're thinking about opening up the region like all at once. So, you know, similar to what I said about Europe, if you're thinking about Latin America, the way to do it is to take it a country at a time, really think deeply and do the research about which country, you know, is the biggest commercial opportunity for your business, and then just proceed to figure out how to go in there, you know, one at a time. And you'll be able to scale it rapidly once you build the initial infrastructure you need, but you got to take it slow.
Yeah. So are you guys selling in, you know, Brazil, Argentina, some of the bigger countries in South America, or at the moment is it just a little bit too complex for, I mean, if I'm in Brazil, can I go and order a bike on specialized.bz or whatever it is, or no?
You can order online in Brazil, order online in Colombia and Peru, and we have dealer networks in all of the other major countries, or at least a distributor who can help you find what you're looking for. The Colombia and Peru online stores are sort of interesting case studies. They're actually not on our global platform. The local market and the local e-commerce team had to build their own sort of self-sustaining system because, again, we were struggling to sort of integrate the country into our global payment gateway. So they were able to sort of kind of build it within their own, but it's created a bit of duplicate work. It's not as efficient as we'd like, but what we're doing is we're going to help, you know, we're helping them optimize and keep it on brand and provide as much infrastructure as possible. And then when each of the stores gets to sort of a sufficient growth rate, you know, we'll revisit sort of integrating them into the larger global setup.
What about India? Kind of its own beast, right along China in terms of population, but some challenges logistically for sure. I don't know. I think it's read somewhere. There's like, you know, 20 plus languages just in India alone, which is only one of the challenges there. But you got so many people. And I feel like every year I read like India is on the cusp of exploding as an e-commerce market. And I feel like that always gets pushed out a year and maybe a year in a year. But are you guys doing stuff in India? Is logistically, have you tried to crack that nut? What's been your experience there?
We're not trying to do anything right now. It's just not on the priority list. I will say I have talked to a few colleagues at other brands, not in the bike industry, who are trying to make it work. And it sounds like logistics and loss prevention is a huge challenge, depending on what you're selling. So yeah, no real operations there yet, but you know, we're kind of just watching to see what happens and trying to figure out what makes sense for the brand.
And anything in Africa at all?
No, we've got a pretty great distributor network in South Africa, but we're very small in the rest of the world. Typically, you know, with a region like that, you'll find a lot of people will travel to like Europe, buy a bike, box it up, and ship it back to themselves, you know, wherever they're living on the continent.
What? So maybe shifting gears a little bit. That's really interesting to get your kind of global perspective on everything. So thank you. For marketing, what, you know, we talked about some of the unique challenges, especially on the higher end side for bikes in terms of, you know, it's not your traditional, you know, let's run Google ads and, you know, direct attribution within 3 days from going from not being aware of the brand to dropping, you know, $7,000 on a pimped out bike. But for maybe some of those smaller, you know, the stuff on the lower side of the price points, especially your equipment, you know, apparel, accessories, things like that. What's your bread and butter for e-commerce? And maybe there isn't one. Maybe you're doing everything well as a global brand probably should be. Paid search, content marketing, all of it. Like, what do you really, on lead gen for shorter term purchases, what are you guys really spending the most time on and trying to do extremely well?
Well, Instagram is just great for us for content marketing. I mean, like I said before, we don't hard sell through there. But the content that comes out of it is it makes you want to stop whatever you're doing and, you know, get outside and hop on a bike, right? So that just continues to sort of evolve. Google Shopping for equipment's been great for us. Done a lot of work optimizing our data feed and just making sure Merchant Center, you know, warnings and, you know, issues at the SKU level are at an absolute minimum and that we're giving it all of the metadata it wants. We're also taking advantage of smart shopping campaigns, which have been great for us as well. And then, you know, kind of the big thing for us, because we have such a big catalog, is really optimizing the on-site experience. So we have a huge testing program. You know, we'll run anywhere from, I don't know, 30 to 50 experiments a month. And it's a lot of fun because you can just try a lot of different things when you have sort of the right testing software in place, learn a lot that way. And so, you know, you'll see, I mean, if you've been paying attention, we just sort of upgraded our, you know, side filtering. You know, we had spent months heat mapping that, testing, hiding certain parts of it, seeing what people were actually using to try to cut like a giant mountain bike category, you know, down to what they're interested in. So that work is sort of just ongoing. But we've just seen, you know, huge uplifts in conversion and reductions in abandonment rate. It's been great.
That's interesting. What do you guys, when you think about, I think a lot of people approach experimentation in a very undisciplined way. And I speak primarily for myself here, you know, like, hey, let's run this test to see how it works. But you run it for a while. Ah, it seems like this maybe did, you know, this seems better anecdotally, a slight lift here. Let's keep it. So you guys, I'm guessing, are doing it much more rigorously, scientifically, a lot more volume of tests. What is a good result? You know, when you say you go through and you do one of these experiments and you get a bump where you feel like it's fairly statistically significant in terms of, you know, let's just say, you know, conversion rate, like what is a meaningful, what's a good outcome? Is it, you know, do you consistently have things where, you know, you're able to see bumps of 10, 15, maybe even 20%? Or is, you know, if you're able to get a 5% lift across something, is that a pretty phenomenal win? I guess I'm trying to get a sense of, for someone who does testing well and rigorously, like how much of a actual bump, if you commit to doing it well, can you expect to see?
Well, it it differs for everybody. I would say, and it took me a long time to learn this, like when it comes to testing, you got to be happy to take whatever you can get, right? So even if you can eke out, you know, a 0.5% win, if you can stack 5 of those in a row, I mean, that adds up, right? And it, in my early years, it was hard to like resist getting greedy, right? Because you land that one like home run of a test that like just jacks conversion rate by 25%. And you're like, well, okay, this next genius idea is going to do the same. And then it like is flat. And you start to think maybe you're not.
You're losing it. Yeah, you don't got the edge anymore.
Not the evil genius you thought you were. But now typically what we see is anywhere from like 3 to 5 percent, you know, we're content. Above 5 is good, and above 10% uplift in conversion, you're killing it. But, you know, I'll give you a great example of like two test results where, you know, we thought it was going to go one way and it went the other. We had a login page on checkouts before. So if you're in your cart page, you say proceed to checkout. You had that sort of standard login where on the left there was, you know, an entry field, and on the right there was a button that said checkout as a guest. And, you know, our theory was that if we just got rid of it, because 80% of our checkouts we knew were guests already, you know, it would just remove so much friction. We removed that and it made no difference to conversion rate. On the other hand, we hid the footer from the checkout pages after the cart page, and it boosted conversion rate 11%. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, philosophically you think this, you're moving this huge boulder, but actually it's the other thing, you know, that makes the big difference. And it's important when you start kind of layering these in, you got to keep good records. You got to keep, you know, your experiments organized. We organize it by page type. So, you know, it's a homepage experiment, or it's a category page experiment, or a product page, or a checkout page, right? And then within there is where we get fancy. So if, you know, we're trying to optimize checkout for mobile, right? It's going to be a checkout. It's going to be in the checkout folder, you know, with all the other active experiments. And, you know, that's where we sort of get fancy with the device targeting.
Maybe before we wrap up here, one thing I thought was interesting as I was trolling through and stalking all of your comments in the forums to try to, you know, just get some interesting things to talk to you about and get some more insight into your experience. You had this great thought, unpopular opinion. I think it was in the thread titled, you know, what's your unpopular opinions about e-commerce? And more or less, you thought that enterprise e-commerce is dying. So unpack that a little bit for me. Like, what do you, if you working at, you know, a well-known large global brand think enterprise e-commerce is dying, that's interesting to me. Why do you think that?
Well, maybe I've just been in the space too long.
too jaded.
Yeah, so I'm jaded. I'm happy to do that, right? So, I mean, I guess we're considered enterprise. You know, we're on a single global platform hosted by SAP that's just empowered us to do a lot of things globally, quickly and well. And, you know, enterprise e-commerce, when you think about like what enterprise software means, it means, you know, software that works for an entire organization as opposed to, say, an individual. You know, the more of these sort of conferences I go to and people I meet and, you know, other sort of, I would say, larger brands I meet, you know, people are starting to sort of, you see the same frustration surface again and again, which is, you know, typically rooted in cumbersome contracts, you know, software that doesn't stay up to date, or, you know, fights with legacy issues. And then you kind of look on the other side, you know, and this is, you know, this is why I'm just so glad to be a part of the ECF group, is entrepreneurs building their own business using, you know, new software, I would say, like Shopify or Woo, you know, email service providers like Klaviyo, and they're not only moving quickly, but nimbly, and also doing some serious volume. I think my point was that I'm starting to see a shift where, you know, the software companies that empower their clients to be more nimble, be more agile, not have to worry about updates, not have to worry about on-premise or servers or any of that sort of stuff, you know, that they basically free up their clients to focus on the business and not the technology, you know, are the ones that are just gaining ground the fastest. It's a really exciting time. There's no better time to start an online business than right now, just given how low the barrier is. I mean, when I started doing e-com 13 years ago, if you didn't have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars and an IT department, you know, it was super hard to get started. But that's ending now.
Yeah, from the, I mean, it's cool too that you're having a lot of stuff that was originally only available to like global brands, like Specialized, that now maybe not 100%, but you can get a lot of that functionality and stuff that's it's at, you know, probably 5% of a traditional enterprise price for someone who's just starting out, which is, you know, maybe 80 to 90% of those features, which is really cool. And also when I think enterprise, I think like obnoxious salespeople. I think, you know, I have to sit through your 90-minute demo before you'll even tell me how much it costs. I think, you know, like the contracts that you said, and having those, hopefully, those are always, I mean, it's not going to disappear overnight, but getting rid of those, oh man, that just sounds, I almost never, unless it's an incredibly good fit or a hugely painful problem, if I don't have pricing and can't, you know, sign up quickly for something, man, nothing, few things are worse than having to sit through a 90-minute demo for something that you're only, you know, moderately interested in to see if it's a good fit.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and not to totally knock it. I mean, there's three big things that I see missing, you know, still, right? We've been talking a lot about like international expansion and stuff. These are really the three things that I think, you know, if you can close that gap, if you're a smaller, you know, platform, you've really solved a major pain point for a lot of, you know, larger brands. And, you know, I think one is, you know, some sort of store sync. The other piece is, you know, I haven't seen a really compelling CMS, you know, that's sort of native into any of these platforms. You can go out and buy one. That's not going to be cheap. And, you know, that's the key to adoption, because everyone who's building content and building beautiful pages and landing pages in companies is typically not very technical. They're creative, right? That's where the beauty comes from. So any sort of page building or CMS system that makes that easy, that's, you know, no code or very close to it, and kind of a what you see is what you get, is great. And then the last piece is just solving for the B2B side. And I know, you know, Shopify in particular made some key acquisitions this year. So I'm excited to see, you know, what they turn that into.
Perfect. Well, are you up for wrapping things up here with a fast lightning round?
Happy to.
Awesome. So first question, if you had to ride one mountain bike brand apart from Specialized, of course, that's going to be your number one. Who's your second favorite you know, brand in the space if you couldn't rep Specialized?
I knew you were going to ask this. You know, honestly, I'd probably, if I had to choose, probably choose the direct to consumer brand Canyon, but just to box it and I could see what that would look like, and then I'd send it back to them.
Wait, say that again. You do it just so you could see what the unboxing experience was like?
Exactly.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Well, you could still do that. I mean, but you wouldn't ride them. You would just do it just for intelligence research, huh?
Yeah, probably.
What's your favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
I love, you know, personalization and testing software. If you set it up right and you have a clear idea of what you want, there's just so much you can do. And you don't need, you know, developers or IT to do it, you know, and you can test ideas. And, you know, from the point of view of changing and improving your website, you know, you also just come away with a huge data set that supports, you know, that the changes you're making are the right ones, and that'll help you sleep at night.
And so who are you using for that specifically?
We use Monetate. They're a great partner for us.
And what's your least favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
Oh, it's probably a tie between just managing all the data feeds we need for all of our marketing software, and address validation internationally is a pain in the ass. Like, it honestly, it blows my mind that we're in like we're basically in 2020, and there's still like no single solid, reliable global address validator that can also support things like autocomplete. It's crazy.
Heads up, anyone listening in the SaaS space, ding, 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 marketing idea here. Business idea, rather. What's the most effective marketing strategy that you guys have seen in the last 6 to 12 months?
It was simple for us. It's an automated email that's a notification of a price drop. So we basically do a 30-day look back, you know, for, so if we drop, if we move a SKU to clearance, right, and it's on markdown, our ESP will look back 30 days for people who browse but didn't buy. And if they're opted in, and they haven't received anything else in like the last week, I think, we'll send them just a quick note saying, hey, you know, that product you're looking at has been reduced, shop now, you know, while we've got a few left. And that's just, it's been like free money. It's, we're actually kind of shocked how well it's done. I mean, and it was just one of those automations, you know, you put some personalization in it, you show the actual color variant of what they viewed, and you just set it and forget it. It's wild.
That's cool. What's the favorite item that you guys sell at Specialized?
You know, I'd say our Angie crash sensor is pretty cool. We built a crash sensor that you can attach to any helmet. It doesn't have to be Specialized, but if you link it up with our ride app, it basically is a crash detection system. So if you take a spill and you're, you know, out alone and you have it active, it'll give you sort of, you know, a few seconds to sort of shake it off. But if you don't, or you can't respond to the app, it sends a text to an emergency contact for you with a geo location, so someone can come and pick you up if you need help.
That's cool. What's the last thing you apologized for?
Probably dirty dishes in the sink. My girlfriend likes to keep it clean. I don't always.
And what's one of your life goals that's at least a decade plus in the future?
Probably to hike through the Himalayas, I would say would be one. And also just sort of build a service or something that allows me to give back to the e-com community. I mean, you guys like at ECF and just, you know, people I've met in the industry, you know, over the years have just been super kind and generous with their time. And, you know, I need to do more of that active participation as opposed to just be, you know, silent.
And then finally, what's the number one quality you look for in people that you voluntarily spend time with and become friends with at this stage in your life?
Probably honesty at this point, you know, really constructive honesty. It takes a combination of courage and caring and a genuine desire to see other people do well, you know, and it's a fine line, right? You know, honesty isn't telling someone, you know, they're wearing ugly shoes. It's, you know, it's a bit deeper than that, right?
I saw you looking at my shoes a bunch in Boston. Now I know what's going on here. Okay. Mental note, point taken.
Yeah. So I'd probably say honesty.
Awesome. Well, Alex, awesome to geek out with you on bikes, global e-commerce, of which, you know, I know very little, and obviously you have tons more experience there. So, and awesome. Yeah, thanks for being a part of the community, man. It's been great having you. I looked at your join date. I thought, and you've been with us for 2 or 3 years and been a great part of the membership in there. And so, yeah, thanks for being a part of this and the community and being willing to come on and talk shop on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much. And, you know, people should reach out to me if they want to get in touch at ecommerceplaybooks.com. I'm building a repository of a lot of the sort of models and frameworks that have worked for us over the year, you know, and it's meant to be sort of, you know, for exactly this, if you're an intermediate business and you're thinking about international expansion or whatever, you know, and I just hope it helps people sort of guide them to make the right decisions for their business. So I'll post that on the forum as well, and people can have a crack and let me know what you think and let me know what you want to see.
Yeah, very cool. So this is, it's specifically looking at your website right here. It's a book or it's a series of courses and is specifically designed for, who's it best designed for? Is it someone who's trying to go global or someone who's got a, you know, couple million in sales that they're trying to get the most out of?
Yeah, it's that intermediate couple million in sales. You've got an established presence in your home country and you're trying to take that next step. It could either be expanding internationally. There's a bunch of things in there about how to choose the right retail partner if you choose, you know, to enter just a distributor partnership. There's also stuff like, you know, a fully baked P&L. And I'm still building it out. I would just welcome feedback from people because, you know, for us, like when I went through all these over the course of, you know, a decade plus, like these don't exist, you know? So I had to sort of build them and refine them and I'm just trying to create a resource. I am writing a book too, but it's in its very early stages. And my hope is that if I can get some good feedback on, you know, which playbooks are working for people, we can turn it into something bigger and better and useful to help people sort of reach that level of global domination I know we all seek in our online business.
Yeah, you've got the ultimate guide to replatforming. That's something I've thought about doing and have never done, and you're obviously actually doing it. There's so much stuff if you have never done a replatforming to think through and think about. I can see that being hugely valuable for people. So ecommerceplaybooks.com. Check it out. Some really good stuff on here. And yeah, Alex, this has been fun, man. Anything else you want to mention before we sign off?
I'm good. Just thanks for having me. It's just been a real pleasure. And I hope I can meet some more members and some more listeners out there at, you know, one of these e-commerce conferences or events coming up in the near future. Just look for the guy with the S on his chest.
I love it. Hopefully we'll be looking out for a bike ride one of these days.
Sounds good.
That's going to do it for this week, but a few important things to know about, especially if you're a store owner, before you go. First, if you're looking to hire for your e-commerce business, make sure to check out the e-commerce fueled job boards. We'll get your job in front of thousands of qualified job seekers to find you the perfect candidate. And if you're looking for work, you should check out the dozens of handpicked opportunities along with lots of other roles that pop up every week at ecommercefuel.com/jobs. And if you're an established store owner, you absolutely should be a member of our private community for 7-figure plus store owners. You get access to a discussion forum with over 1,000 vetted, experienced e-commerce entrepreneurs, invitations to our in-person member-only events, and access to our private review directory with over 5,000 software and service provider reviews. That sounds interesting. You can learn more and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com/form. That's F-O-R-U-M. And a big, big thank you to the two sponsors who make this show possible. First, to Klaviyo, who makes email marketing automation incredibly easy and powerful. If you're not using them for your store, you're leaving money on the table. You can get started for free at ecommercefuel.com/Klaviyo. And then secondly, to Liquid Web, the absolute best place to host your WooCommerce store anywhere online. If you want a rock solid store that can scale with you when you need it to, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/Liquid Web. Thanks so much for listening and looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
The ASY Radio Network, live from New York.